Hey listeners, Lex on the Decks here. Before you get stuck into this episode of Hot Girls, I wanted to let you know about something else you may be interested in. Though Hot Girls in its podcast format isn't releasing new episodes any longer, if you head over to my Substack, which is lexonthedecks.substack.com, you'll find more interviews and insight on gender minority artists and how to overcome any barriers to entry. You'll also get the opportunity to sign up to my weekly newsletter, 5 Good Things. This is an email letter which will land in your inbox on Fridays, sharing 5 of my favourite cultural or creative discoveries of the week. You'll find all that on lexonthedecks.substack.com. Thank you, and I hope you enjoy this episode of Hot Girls.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to Hot Girls with me, Lex on the Decks. This is the show where we explore the music industry through intimate conversations on creativity and biography episodes, taking a look at the lives of iconic artists. On today's episode, I catch up with an artist who's got an incredible repertoire of songs behind her. She started her career as a songwriter, and if you sung along to It's Just Too Little Too Late, or Niall Horan's Slow Hands, or Do It All in the Name of Love, then you've sung along to some Ruth Ann. And I mentioned those songs first because of the scale of their fame, but as an artist, she's also had an incredible career and is looking towards her next EP and album release. So just how did this Irish girl navigate the LA pop scene at 17 years old? And how has she moved through her career? Ruth Ann on the Hot Girls podcast. Let's go.
Ladies, gentlemen.
Listen up. You're listening to Hot Girls. With Lex on the Decks.
We in the mix.
It's fire.
Keep it going. We on fire.
From London for the world.
Let's go in.
My parents used to put me up on a chair in the pubs on a Sunday when we'd be having our roast dinner, and I would sing apparently for people at 4, and I would put a hat out when I was 7. Like, I was put up on the top of McDonald's table singing Mariah Carey. I just remember always wanting to sing for people and entertain people, and I would go around people, gangs, probably not the best thing to do when I was young, and be like, I'll sing for you if you give me 50p. So I just remember always singing, always wanting to learn songs and being just, yeah, obsessed with music, really.
I love that you put a hat out. Yeah. You're a hustler.
Yeah. Well, I think when you're that age, you don't necessarily know you're good at something. But I didn't come from a very rich family. So my mum was like, well, if you want sweets, you know, if you want extra sweets. So sometimes I would do it just to get money so I could get me and my friends sweets at the shops. Like, it wasn't necessarily because I even was any good. It was just that I just loved doing it and wanted to get extra sweets.
Were your family musical or creative at all?
Yeah, there was a lot of instruments in my house, and my parents are obsessed with music and they sing in church. So there was guitars, there was a piano, keyboards, and my mum and dad are known to start the family sing songs wherever we go. So on holidays, we'd always be that family that would start a sing song, and yeah, very, very musical family.
Yeah. So then did you learn instruments from a young age as well, sort of in the house, or...
Yeah, my dad gave me like a 2-track tape recorder with the microphone, and that's where I started writing songs at like 7. And then I started teaching myself the piano at like 12 from ear. So I just started kind of, I think they got me a guitar when I was 8, but my dad attempted to teach me, but I really didn't like the guitar. So I just stuck with the piano. And now I play a bit of guitar and ukulele, but at the time when I was 8, it like hurt my fingers too much. So I went with the piano. So I was kind of self-taught that. And my parents were really good. They kind of just let me lead. They were encouraging, but they weren't pushy. So, you know, they could see I preferred the piano. So they kind of nurtured that and weren't like, you have to play the guitar kind of thing. So
Yeah. And I'm always really interested from people who, like you, who gravitated towards something at a young age, but also had the resilience to kind of keep pursuing it. And I guess maybe because on a personal note, I was really interested in certain things when I was younger, but I don't, when I look back, I'm like, oh, I didn't really have the, I didn't understand how committed you had to be to kind of build a craft. And yeah. Do you think that was just a part of you as a young person, or you just genuinely were very happy tinkering away on the piano and practicing?
Yeah, I kind of was very weirdly obsessed with music and how music is made. And I almost like was teaching myself vocals from a very young age without anybody really showing me. I just was watching singers. And I remember like my parents would say I would spend like 2 hours when I was 10 going over and over Mariah Carey riffs, like perfecting them. But no one was telling me to do it. I just would listen back and go, no, that's not good enough. And I was 10. It's quite strange. It was just in me to just be quite obsessed and committed to the craft of like vocals and performing and writing from a very young age. And then as I grew up, I started taking from every experience I was having in writing rooms and everything. I was just soaking up everything like a sponge. That was kind of the part of it that was like, it's like a music college in a way when you become a songwriter, because you're just going around the industry and you're just soaking up everything like a sponge.
Yeah.
So yeah, I feel like I always was very committed to the craft of it all and the skill of it all.
How did you get in your first room as a songwriter? Can you remember the first sort of experience?
Yeah. So from like 7 to 17, I really was writing songs 100% just in my bedroom. And I was in a girl band at the time that I had formed in Ireland because I wanted to kind of hear the harmonies back. And we had gotten some recording time through like my dad's friend. And so I'd written a bit with them a little bit, but not really. And then it was mainly me writing and producing everything. And then when I was 17 and I won this songwriting competition in Ireland, and a manager found me there who was managing Mark and Danny from The Script. And he brought me to LA, and it was my third day there was like my first ever real co-writing session. And I co-wrote Too Little Too Late by JoJo that day when I was 17. I had just finished my exams, first time ever in LA. And then it took 2 years for that song to come out. But yeah, it was very surreal that that was my first real co-writing session.
Your first real co-writing session, and you wrote a song that has had probably more of a lasting, I don't, maybe it's just my age, but I'm like, that is a song that everybody I know knows all the words to. It's quite, yeah, and it's, probably you would have had no idea at that time that it would have that lasting power.
I had no idea. Yeah, no, because it was written for me and I could hear her sing it. And like when I was singing the demo, I was thinking of her because to me, it sounded so like a JoJo song. But yeah, it took 2 years to come out. And then when it just became such a massive hit, and then still to this day, you know, when people know it so well and they have a story about what they went through and what it means to them, it's actually really amazing to me that it's lasted, that it's lasted the test of time.
Yeah. I just want to cycle back slightly to when you made that move to LA. Were you nervous? Were your family nervous?
Yeah, I think because I was only 17. I think we were all nervous, but I think also when you're 17, you haven't been damaged by anything in life, really. Well, I hadn't been. I was quite sheltered. So I was quite fearless in a way and like ready to do it. And it was my dream. And I was going to Hollywood and I'd never been to America before. And so it was all quite exciting, but it was quite a lonely time, I would say, because I was very young and I wasn't really around people my age over there. Everyone was older. And I couldn't drink and I couldn't drive. And so I felt a bit isolated there. It was hard to make friends over there. And you're just kind of thrown into all these different rooms and you're kind of trying to figure out what it even is to be, you know, in the industry. So I think it was a kind of an education of the music industry those first few years. But yeah, I was fearless then, I think.
I actually think it's quite difficult to make friends when you move to a new city, but you don't, like, what are your avenues for making friends? And I suppose the natural space for you, because you're working, would have been through work. But it's kind of like, if you're not working with the same people over a long period of time, how do you build those deeper relationships where you feel kind of safe and secure and you know who you can trust. I don't know what the process was like when you were writing. Were you in and out of different rooms a lot, or were you working?
Yeah, you were constantly meeting new people. It was like speed dating all the time, like in a work way. And so, yeah, very difficult to make friendships at last. And also because everyone's so busy, you could get on really well with someone at a session, but when would you see each other next? Because everyone's hustling, everyone's working all the time. Everyone in the industry is, you know, bouncing from session to session. So you could go months without seeing, or a year without seeing that person again. So definitely very difficult to make friends in the industry. And it can be quite clicky and people have their cliques and, you know, you're like the newcomer and you're 17. And yeah, so it was the first few years I didn't really like LA very much. And I was going back and forth, but it was hard to find my feet there, really.
Yeah. Who was, I know you said you went over there with someone who worked with the script, was managing the script. Did you have a consistent manager when you were out there, or were you signed to a label, the same label the whole time?
Yeah, I had a consistent manager for the first few years. And then I moved management, you know, subsequently, and I signed a publishing deal and stuff like that. But once I kind of had a solid team in place, that made everything more solid, because I had a team and I had people around me and everything like that, you know. So the more I went into my career, the more kind of secure and more stable it got.
Yeah. When you, how long were you actually in LA? How long did you stay out there for?
So I was going back and forth for the first few years, and then I lived there for 8 years, and now I live back in the UK.
Yeah. So quite a long period of time. Focusing on, when you were initially doing the songwriting, were you also recording your own stuff that you wanted to kind of keep back for yourself as an artist? Or were you focusing on songwriting initially and then started to focus more on yourself as an artist?
Well, actually, when I first went over at 17, it was my artist stuff. So Too Little Too Late, all these songs are being written for me as an artist, mm-hmm. And as a singer. And then it was when I had, obviously, that became a massive hit. Of course, everybody was asking me to write, oh, we need Ruth Ann to get in art for our artist that we have signed. So I kind of transitioned into being a songwriter through that, and then kind of was like, okay, well, I've got my foot in the door. And when you get your foot in the door, you kind of just have to go for it. I didn't come from money. So I was like, okay, this is my way to fund my living here. Mm. So I kind of was like, okay, let's be as successful as I can as a songwriter, and then I can do my artist stuff on the side and be working away at it. But I think you always have to master one thing. You can't give 100% to both. You have to kind of go one thing at a time. Yeah. Which is really good advice that I got. You know, if you're 50-50, if you're given half of yourself to either, you're not going to make either successful. So I kind of went for it 100% on the songwriting since my foot was in the door. And then I kind of circled back to being an artist. The stuff started falling out of me, the songs for my first album. And then I met like another manager who was like John Legend's manager, who was loved my artist stuff. So it all kind of happened in the universe the way it was meant to.
You've written some incredible songs as well as Too Little Too Late, and quite diverse songs as well, like for different styles.
Yeah. I'm a bit greedy with music genres. I love it. I love a lot of different music. So I like that. My discography is all over the place because it's all the different styles of music that I love. So
I think it's cool though, because it's like, I can't remember who I was talking to this about, but ultimately as people, we have so many different sides to us. And it can be a strange thing when someone knows you for one thing and they're like, yeah, just be more of that. But you're like, but I'm a human. I have lots of different sides, lots of different ways to express myself.
I have layers.
Yeah. But did you find there were certain people that you had really good collaborative, like that you worked with really well, like any nice creative partnerships that stood out to you during that period of time?
Yeah. I mean, I've had so many different creative partnerships that, and I like to keep it versatile, but like the Julian Bonetta and John Ryan, I did a lot of the, you know, a lot of the One Direction stuff with, and some of the Niall Horan stuff. And then also Matt Rad was another collaborator that I did like the In the Name of Love, the BB Rex and Martin Garrix stuff. And then a lot of Niall's first record with, and Dan Wilson was someone that I loved writing with. And there's so many people that I've had really great, and I still have really good creative collaborations with. So the list is kind of endless, really.
Yeah. Have you ever had an experience where you wrote a song and then maybe handed it over to someone or heard back the finished version and was like, eh, what have you done with my song?
Yeah, I think that's bound to happen when you're in the industry for as long as I've been now. It's been what, like over 15 years. Sometimes, you know, the essence of the song gets lost and it's overproduced, or the label get it over A&R and you kind of lose the magic of a song. And then sometimes you get it back and the song is enhanced and it sounds even better than the demo. And so it can kind of go either way. But I've been pretty lucky that I've really liked a lot of the versions that have come out. I've been quite happy with a lot of them.
Yeah.
So I've been quite lucky in that way. I think the people that I work with and that I've really good relationships with, I think all understand that, you know, that you've got to do what's best for the song. And at all times, it's about the song, not anyone's ego or, you know, everything like that. And so I've been really lucky to work with unbelievable producers who know exactly what to do to make the song sound the best.
Yeah. So you mentioned that you met John Legend's manager or someone who was working John Legend at the time. And it was at a time when you were starting to want to focus on yourself as an artist. Can you talk a little bit about that process and that transition process for when you were able to start focusing more on yourself as an artist rather than a songwriter?
Yeah, so I was getting to a place in LA where I was feeling a little uninspired and unmotivated, and that everything was just a little bit flat creatively for me. And I decided to go back to London and Ireland. And I said, I'm just going to write whatever I want to write. And I'd gone through a lot of the time and I felt like I had a lot of stories to tell, but you know, they were stories that I needed to tell. And sometimes when you're working with an artist or you're in with a lot of other songwriters, you don't get to fully tell your story because there's a lot of different cooks in the kitchen. So I think I needed time to just kind of write myself with just like me and a producer and no one else, you know, no one else. And I did that. And in those 3 weeks, I wrote most of my first album, Matters of the Heart. And everything had this, you know, sound about it that I always was trying to get to in my teens and when I first started writing. And it felt like an identity as an artist and my voice and everything. It all started coming together. And when I started playing it for people, they were like, oh my God, this sounds like you. There's no one who could, this is you, this is you. And then at the same time, I didn't really know what I was going to do with it. I just felt really creatively fulfilled after I did those 3 weeks and I felt inspired again. And I felt like I'd gotten these stories out that I needed to tell. And then at the same time, there was an artist who is signed to the same management as John Legend, Lindsay Sterling. And she had a song that she needed a feature vocalist on. And I was asked to vocal it. And through that, I met the manager and the management team, friends at work who manage John Legend and Charlie Puth and Lindsay Sterling. And they were like, your artist trajectory is the same vibe as John Legend. You know, it's like soul, and we know how to do soul. So they listened to the record and they were like, this is amazing, you know. And so then we got a record deal and we started kind of finishing the album and starting being an artist and starting doing shows again and performing, which it really made me realize how much I had missed all that, because that's where I'm very comfortable at home on the stage. And I have
millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Been on the stage in a long time. So that was when I was like, wow, it's so great that I can do both now. I can be a songwriter and I can also be an artist. And I have my listeners and followers for both. And that's like where I've always wanted to get to. So to find that balance was really amazing.
I'm interested, and I don't know if this is something that you feel like, I'm interested in your perspective on this. I think some people, I'm always interested in this kind of conversation around gift versus craft and sort of natural talent versus something that you've built. As a singer and as a songwriter and as an artist, do you think your talent is something you were kind of, is a gift or something that you've honed and developed within yourself?
I think that's a good question. I think my gift is singing, because it's always been naturally what I've done since I was born. And I'd say that I've probably honed the skill of songwriting. I'd say that the gift of songwriting is definitely in there as well, but I think that songwriting needs crafting and you need to work on it. And it's a muscle that you need to build, and you get better and better as you, the more that you write. But I would say there was a gift in me to maybe know how to tell a story that can hit people in a universally maybe, or know how to tell a story that connects with people. But I would say that songwriting definitely is something that needs honing, whereas singing is something that I've always just been very natural at. I've never been trained to be a singer, but it's just natural to me. And so I feel like that's a gift.
Yeah. So did your first album came out in 2019? Is that right?
2018, I think. Maybe it was 2000. It's so hard with COVID now. No, it was 2019. You're right. It was 2019. My first single came out in 2018, and then my album came out in 2019. Yes.
You're making me think though. I'm like, when was COVID? Was it 2020?
COVID's like messed up my mind. Yeah. So the album was 2019 and my first single came out in 2018. Yeah.
Do you think I know it's a conversation that we've had way too much, but do you think COVID really would have disrupted your plans at all?
Yeah, I had been touring a lot in 2018 and a lot in 2019, but definitely, of course, you know, I had plans for 2020 and festivals and summer things, and everything got moved. But I actually think it was the best thing for me, really, creatively. I got to work on my new EP and my next album that's in the works as well. So I would say I miss gigging a lot, but it was actually nice for me to slow down and get time to work creatively on the next bit of music.
Yeah. And then talking about the EP that's just come out, when you're thinking about a body of work like that, how do you make that, like for that, how did you make the decision that it was right to put out this material now? Does it become a professional decision or more of a personal decision around like, oh, this is a message that I really connect with at the moment and I want to put out in the world and put it out to my fans?
Yeah, I think I knew that I wasn't going to finish an album this year, and this body of work felt like a collection of songs that really made sense to where the world was at, what I went through. And it almost felt like it was like the in-between chapter, because I always think albums and EPs, they go in chapters of your life. They're like little chapters, and this felt like a chapter, and now I'm entering into a new chapter. So I felt like I wanted to get new music out there because we couldn't tour and because we couldn't do much else. I think it was more like I want my listeners to have something new to listen to that they can connect with and everything like that. So I just felt like after being in lockdown for so long, I was just itching to get new music out there.
Yeah. Having had the opportunity to work with a lot of artists and watch their release process, were there things that you, when you decided to front, you know, the previous album and this EP, were there things that you brought to that process and the journey that you learned from watching maybe what other people had gone through or even what you yourself had gone through in, say, the LA years?
100%. I got to see how I would want to do things differently or how I would want to do things the same as some of the artists I'd seen. And everything, I learned so much over that time. I was just like soaking up everything like a sponge. And sometimes you even learn too much and you get to see too much of the inner workings, and that can be of the business and that can be harmful to the art side. But I've tried to always keep it about the art, the making good art and it being about the music and nothing else. But I definitely have taken things from what I've seen and what I've been around.
Yeah, I had, I don't know, do you know Shingy, who is, she's an artist herself, but she was also in the Noisettes.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, so I had a very long conversation with her, I think it was on the last season of the podcast, but she was talking about how when she was, when she signed her first deal, she got a lot of things that on the outside would have been amazing opportunities with it kind of being in the room with amazing musicians and huge producers, but where she found it very intimidating because she'd be kind of the only woman in the space, often the only Black person in the space. And then everyone would kind of turn to her as the songwriter and the artist and be like, right, so what are you feeling emotional about at the moment? That she'd be in these spaces where she felt like they weren't creatively fruitful spaces for her, despite on the outside it being like, wow, how cool, you're in these amazing studios.
Yeah.
Did you have similar experiences?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I was mainly, when I've been a songwriter, I've been in rooms of just men and me and maybe a female artist, but mainly like sometimes like five men and then me. And I experienced that a lot of the time. For my artist stuff, it's very me. It's very much me and the producer, because I actually find it quite hard to write in rooms with more than three people, because I think it's a lot of people, too many people making decisions, and it can be great for a certain type of song and crafting a song and going line by line and making a pop record. But when you're making an artistic record, you have to feel very comfortable and you have to be, and I think artists need to lead. So I wouldn't have needed a lot of songwriters telling me what I felt or trying to, you know, get stories out of me, because that was all kind of me steering the ship as an artist. And all my favorite artists are like that. They don't write with many people at all. So, but in songwriting scenarios, I've been at writing camps where I've been the only woman with like 20 men, and definitely felt that boys club mentality, and definitely felt like I had to fight to be heard. And it was almost like sometimes the process of those songs is like you fighting to be heard as a woman, or you be feeling really insecure or intimidated or not comfortable at all. I also have been in rooms where I've been with guys and felt very comfortable that are like friends of mine. So I've kind of experienced all of it.
Yeah. If you were going to give advice to someone who was entering the industry now, what advice would you give them?
Just in general?
Yeah. And maybe some of it is probably things that you've just learned from growing.
Yeah. My main advice would be, a lot of new writers are trying to get into the A-list rooms. Like, how can I get in with Niall Horan? How can I get in with John Legend? And what I would say is, when you're beginning, don't focus on trying to get into the A-list rooms. Make your room the A-list room. Find like-minded songwriters and producers who are at the same level that you're at. If you're beginning, build a community around yourself where you guys all lift together and rise together and have success together, because then you'll be the rooms that people want to get into. Like, I always give the example of Phineas. He wasn't writing in the A-list rooms, but he is the A-lister now that everybody wants to write with. So make your rooms the rooms that people will want to be in, and build your name that way, with a group around you, a community around you who are passionate and driven and will rise with you. And that's like one of my main pieces of advice. And then trust the process, and always let your talent be the main thing that speaks for itself. Like, don't be thinking you have to go to all the parties and do all the fake thing. You know, let your music, let people hear your music and be like, oh my God, who wrote that? And let that be what is the, your talent be the driving force of what gets you further and further. Just nurture the creative relationships that you, that get the best out of you, and keep nurturing those relationships.
You mentioned that you like working in smaller groups. I was just wondering what your perfect kind of creative setup looks like, if you could paint the scene. Like, is it a studio? Is it just any room with a piano? Do you like candles? Like, what's the vibe?
I think I'm more about energy than like what the room has to look like. I'm more about people energy and being around people who have a good vibe and are nice and have good conversation is always my biggest inspiration. And mainly I like just me, a producer and a musician maybe, or me, a producer and an artist, or me being the artist and a producer. And I really just love to have conversations and get to know someone or just hang out and chat as friends or go for lunch. And then the song just ends up writing itself and feeling very comfortable and just not, no pressure. That's kind of my favorite scenario.
Finally, I just want to kind of look forward.
Yeah.
You mentioned you're working on an album. How far ahead do you plan your releases generally?
I'm normally a few years ahead, actually. Like, I'd written my first album like 3 years before it came out.
Okay,
but
wow.
But I had added a few songs right at the end, you know. And then this, you know, the EP was like written a year before it came out, or maybe a year and a half. And then I'm already working on this album. So I'm normally like a year ahead of when things will come out.
How do you manage your patience around that? Because when you've written something, you're not like, I just want to get out.
I don't know. Yeah, like you do sometimes. But, you know, sometimes you have the ideas all written and things aren't finished and you take. I normally write everything and then I spend that year really getting it right and crafting it and producing it and doing different versions and getting it kind of right. So it's like the magical part of the song is in, you know, when the idea comes out and then you kind of have to get it ready and make everything cohesive and get your artwork and get your videos and everything like that is kind of, so there's plenty of stuff to still be doing before you want to package it right and have it all kind of cohesive and ready to go together. So yeah, I like to take my time with it. There's no rush. I always want quality over, you know, quantity, and let's just release this now. I like it to really feel like it's been given time and like love. A lot of the time, what success I've had as a writer has surpassed what I probably would have put down as a goal. Like, I have a song coming out with Diana Ross in like, I think it's next week. I never would have put her down as a goal. You know, I never would have, you know, so my main thing is I like to have creative goals, different types of songs I'm thinking of writing, ideas, like creative ideas, creative stuff. But I never am too rigid with myself where I'm like, I have to make this amount of money or I have to make this exact career thing, because I think in the music industry it's such a roller coaster ride and it's up and down, and you've got to just buckle up and be ready to go on this journey. You know, it's never going to be, it's up and down all the time, and it's not the most stable of jobs. So I'm always just trying to stay creatively inspired, and so my goals are more like to keep me creatively inspired. What can I do in my life to keep me creatively inspired? Those are my goals, because then that's when I write the better songs, I think.
Mm. And then one question I wanted to ask you, which is maybe a little bit different, and it's very much a female question. You're obviously pregnant at the moment.
Yes, I
congratulations.
Am. Thank you.
Has being pregnant, has it changed anything in your mindset?
Yeah, definitely. Because before you're pregnant, you're only thinking of, you know, really yourself, or, you know, I have my fiance and, you know, there's not as much, you're thinking of yourself and your career and your relationship. And when you're pregnant, you're about to be a mother for the first time and you have this whole new purpose, whole new life purpose. So it changes everything as far as you're thinking about what way you want to raise your child. And, you know, I used to all be career, 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 career. And I think you can still be career focused, but you also then are making space for this whole other purpose. And being a mom, I think, is, you know, one of the hardest jobs and the most important jobs you could ever have in your life. Mm. So for me, success, I've always said that success to me is not necessarily money or fame or hit records. It's like it's raising a family and having a family, because that is, so it's so hard. The world is so difficult and there's so many obstacles that come your way with fertility and health and everything like that. And then you're figuring it out together with your partner, how to raise a child because you've never raised a child. So it's like, that to me is going to be the real success of my life, really, is being a mom.
Are you a reader? Like, are you reading lots of books on it or?
Yes, I actually have one on my lap right now, The Positive Birth Book by Millie Hill that I'm reading. And I am one of them people that, you know, once I get my mindset into doing something, I want to know everything about it. I want to have all the knowledge because knowledge is power. I want to do all the classes. So we've done like the baby first aid class and the antenatal classes and the breastfeeding classes. Like, so I'm just going all in because I want to have as much knowledge as I can to just, you know, be able to know what I'm doing.
Yeah. Yeah. As much as possible.
As much as possible. Even though I know when she arrives, I probably will be like, I don't know what to do. But we'll figure it out. We'll figure it out.
Yeah. Ruthann, thank you so much. I really, really enjoyed this conversation. It's been really, really interesting. If people are listening and they weren't previously familiar with you and they want to kind of look you up, where's the best place to find you?
You can go to my Instagram. This is Ruthann. You can go to my Spotify, just Ruthann. You can go to my Twitter and Facebook. It's all just This is Ruthann or Ruthann. And you can follow my journey, my music journey, my motherhood journey. I'm a very strong advocate for endometriosis and women's menstrual health and stuff like that. So I talk about that a lot on my pages as well. So you can come follow me for all of that stuff.
Yeah, really important stuff. Thank you for being open about that. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for listening, guys. I will see you next week. What up, Lex? Lex on the deck.